Chapter 3. Ron Tuck turned his Chevy onto the gravel driveway off St. George's Avenue. He was home. The familiar sound of the crunching stones under his tires soothed him. The Chevy glided underneath the carport to the back of the house. When Ron turned the key, the engine stopped with a relieved groan. He stroked the dashboard appreciatively. He said, "You kept me alive, baby." Chris Calvin's was the only other car in the back, which, as far as Ron was concerned, was perfect. Chris had heard a car in the driveway and was making his way through the kitchen to the back door. He saw Ron getting out of the Chevy, held the door open with an extended arm. "All right," said Chris. When Ron turned around, Chris blinked and blinked again. Ron's beard was gone, and his hair was short. He looked very thin and haggard. Chris smiled and said, "You made it back here in great time." "Straight through," said Ron. He reached out to shake Chris's hand. Chris took his free hand and put it on Ron's shoulder. Then he slapped him on the back. "All right, you made it." They walked into the kitchen, past a sink that was monstrously overflowing with dirty dishes, and into the living room. Chris was a deceptively tall guy. His shoulders were slender, and his long black hair had lazy waves that bounced on his shoulders as if they were at a beach. He was perpetual motion, tapping a foot or snapping his fingers, smiling and giggling continuously. Chris went to the record shelves and fished out his Jackson Brown For Everyman album. He put on the side that started with "Take It Easy" and said, "Do you want some coffee?" "For sure," said Ron. Ron let his eyes caress the setting, the broken down brown couch and the sidewalk rescued easy chairs were covered with books and guitars. There was a new addition. A full set of drums was set up in one of the corners of the room, and there was an upright piano that had been added in another corner. It looked comfortable and loud. He followed Chris into the kitchen. Not only was the sink filled with dishes, but so was most of the counter space. "You guys must have been having fun last night." "Rock and roll band practice," said Chris. "You started a band?" "I didn't start it, but I'm in it." "Playing guitar?" "Guitar, flute, and vocals," said Chris, bobbing his head and smiling. "Warren must love having a rock band practice in his house." Chris cocked his head to one side and shrugged. "He just goes to New York and stays there on the nights we practice." Chris stared into Ron's face and looked down at his body and then back at his eyes again. "Shaved off your beard, huh?" "I was trying to find work." "You look tired." "Not really. I'm just glad to be back." "Are you going to move back in here?" Ron loved Chris. He always found a way to offer things that he wanted you to have, so it seemed like as if you had the option to take them, not as if he had the option of giving them. "I'd like to stay for a while." "I think you should," said Chris. "Let's have coffee and smoke a joint." Ron hadn't smoked a joint since the night that he left Rahway to go to Minnesota. But Chris didn't wait for an answer. He just said that Ron should pour the coffee that had been perking for some time while he went to get some pot. "Maybe I should take a shower first," said Ron. "Go ahead," said Chris. Ron walked back out to the Chevy and opened his suitcase. He fished out a change of underwear and a clean pair of jeans and some socks and a wrinkled shirt. When he walked back into the kitchen, he saw Chris cleaning a large pile of pot. The coffee was still perking. Ron walked through the kitchen into the middle room that was never used for anything and turned into the bathroom. The smell of mildew lunged out at him from the shower curtain as he turned the water on full blast and stepped in. He scrubbed his body, let his hands run down over the bony contours of his ribs and hips. He dried himself with a damp towel that was last used by he didn't know who or think about who, and slid into his clothes. They were too big for his new body, and he liked the feel and look of his thinness. Brushed his teeth with his finger, gargled with some mouthwash. On his walk back into the kitchen, he realized that he was very tired. The coffee was poured and three joints had been rolled, and the rest of the bag was sitting in front of his cup. So where is everybody? Warren will be out here later this afternoon. He said that you should call when you got in. Lorreen and Nancy will be here for dinner. What about Sarah? She moved to Boston. She'll be down in a week or so. R. Collins is back from Zurich. He's splitting his time between here and Warren's place in New York. Are you still going to law school in the fall? Probably, said Chris as he lit up the joint. I should call Robin, said Ron. What for? I told her that I'd let her know when I got back. Relax. Let her wait for a while. Nobody expected you to get back this early. Ron swallowed some coffee and wondered if he should smoke the joint. When Chris offered it to him, he said, I don't know if I should. Why not? I've had some physical problems out in Minnesota. I don't really know what kind of shape I'm in. You don't look bad. The album made its way down to the I Thought I Was a Child cut. Ron felt himself wanting to cry. It was a song that had caused him to see Robin. Rahway was a place that caused him to see Robin everywhere, in everything. He picked up his coffee and went to the phone. I think I'm going to call Robin, he said. Chris continued to smoke the joint and watch him. It was probably the first time he could remember Ron turning down pot. Maybe there was something to be worried about. Ron entered the area code and the number. The extra digits felt strange because he had just been there yesterday. Now he needed three extra digits to reach this place. There was something important about that. Robin answered the phone on the second ring. I'm back, said Ron. You are? I drove straight through. But the doctor said, it doesn't matter, because I made it. Oh. Are you okay? Yes. Have you seen Alex? Yes. Oh. I'm going to come out there in about 10 days. Ron couldn't hide the excitement in his voice. You are? Will you pick me up from the airport? Of course. Where can I reach you? At Rahway. Oh. There was a long, nervous pause from Robin. Aren't you going home? Not yet. What should I say if your mother calls? Tell her that you think I left. I can't say that. Sure, just say I left, whatever day it was that she calls. She's going to hate me even more. Doesn't matter, does it? Robin drew away from the phone. He sounded very strange. I'll call you at Rahway and let you know when I'm coming in. I'll talk to you then, said Ron. Chris watched Ron hang up the phone. He could stop concentrating on him getting home now. He hadn't told anyone about it, but he sensed that he could feel Ron's spirit through the night as he drew closer. He wasn't really surprised to see him arrive about 10 hours early. Ron's specialty was unexpected entrances and exits. "What do you feel like doing now?" said Chris. "Would you mind if I tried to sleep?" said Ron softly. "Wherever you want," said Chris. "Do you mind if I use your room?" "Go ahead," said Chris. Ron's voice seems to have changed after he'd been on the phone. It had dropped to a whisper. The circles under his eyes seemed deeper. Without saying anything more, he walked back into Chris's room. Chris got up and followed him. There were 4 stereo speakers attached to the unit in the living room. 2 of them fed Chris's bedroom. He flipped the record over and relit the joint on his way. Sitting on his bed, he and Ron smoked the joint without saying much. They listened to the music. Ron's face relaxed as he got stoned. When they finished, Chris got up and left. He went into the living room, turned off the stereo, and put his flute together. Ron picked up a pad and brought it into the bed with him. It was the bed in which they had made love for the last time. He was so tired, but when he closed his eyes, a light seemed to go on in his brain, and her face was illuminated. She sat across from me with summer freckles and a smile that slid over to my face like the feel of her hands creeping into my pockets as we walked. Robin began to take care of things when she woke up that morning. She called her mother's friend Trudy and found out that her mother had fallen down earlier in the week, but that she hadn't broken her arm. Her mother was on a binge, but Trudy said there was nothing unusual about it. After the conversation, Ron wrote her mother a letter explaining that she would be coming out for a visit and that she would like to see her in about a week and a half. Then she called Alex at the office. "I need to see you today," she said. "I've got a luncheon at 2, but I can sneak away for about an hour after that. Are you working tonight?" "At 6. I can come over at 4. "That will be fun." "We have to cut this out, Alex. When you come here today, it's going to be for the last time." "I'm not going to let you do that," said Alex. Robin could hear that there wasn't real worry in his voice. This hadn't been the first time that she told him that she wanted things to be over. "It's not your decision. It's mine." "I won't leave you alone." "Then I'll have to move, won't I?" "You're upset because of Ron. I know that. He doesn't have anything to do with this. I'm upset because of what I've allowed myself to do." "We need to talk. I'll cancel my luncheon and come over at 1. I've made plans with Amanda. I'll meet you here at 4. "Why are you doing this?" said Alex. "We'll talk later." Robin hung up the phone without waiting for him to answer. At least she was going to be able to control some things. Lunch was helpful. Amanda rode over on her bike, and Robin drove them to the deli and then to one of the lakes. Amanda was the one real friend Robin had made in Minnesota. She was a tall, thin girl with straight brown hair that was always tied into a ponytail. She wore large-framed glasses, blue cotton work shirts, and jeans with suspenders on all occasions, whether they were going to the Guthrie Theater or for a work walk through Dinkytown. Amanda's outfit was the same. She often teased Robin about her New York wardrobe and how much space it took up. Robin defended her clothes, saying that she'd made them to keep herself from going crazy with boredom in the winter. She didn't tell Amanda that most of the things were collected from thrift shops and secondhand stores. Amanda wouldn't have cared, and Robin knew that, but Amanda also didn't care what she said to other people, and Robin knew that too. Talking to Amanda about men was another manner. They emptied out their hearts and memories to each other about every man they'd ever known. Amanda was no luckier with men than Robin was. Amanda's problem was wanting one so badly that she went overboard at the taste of a kiss. This was coupled with a taste for men who shared an ironically common trait of just having ended a long-term relationship with someone that Amanda knew. The effect was a double whammy, often causing Amanda both a potential boyfriend and a girlfriend, who resented Amanda for jumping into a bed that she'd just vacated. Amanda had a good sense of humor about it. She often told Robin that from the time she'd first learned that Robin was involved with a married man, she breathed a huge sigh of relief. Robin assured her that she could have one or all of her ex-men. She did feel a bit quizzy about introducing Amanda to Ron, but she was sure that Ron wouldn't be interested. Amanda had tiny tits and a flat ass. Ron could have cared less. Amanda did make the uncontrollable passes, but got insulted when Ron didn't notice them. Robin learned everything she knew about Minneapolis from Amanda. The stores, the lakes, the gardens, the theaters, the restaurant, the zoo. All of it came by way of Amanda's guiding. They sat on a black blanket they'd spread on the bank of one of the city's lakes. They ate salads and sandwiches and giggled about how wonderful it was to be able to eat like pigs without it showing. The sun felt particularly good, and the lake was populated by only a handful of midweek swimmers. The full greens of summer and the light reflecting water caused Robin to grin and put the mess that she was in out of her head. Then she said, "I've got to end this thing with Alex." "Why?" "Because it's over. I'm not excited by the secrecy of it. And he really doesn't love me." "How do you know that?" "He doesn't ever talk about leaving Penelope since I told him not to. He thinks I'm great to have on the side. Yesterday he stopped by to fuck me on the way home and pretended that his car got flooded in the thunderstorm. After he fucked me, he left. His sperm wasn't even dry on my legs, and he was out the door and on his way home for supper." "That really sucks." "I'm going to tell him today." "When?" "Before I go to work." Maybe he couldn't help having to go home. "Amanda, don't you dare." "I wouldn't. After all," said Robin, with a nasty little smirk on her face, "he is my cousin's husband." "You're a complete bitch." "Only sometimes." When they finished laughing, Amanda gave Robin the latest installment in the never-ending story of Todd, her one true love, who, according to Robin, was also a true piece of shit. He'd stop by Amanda's apartment at 1 in the morning to buffer and borrow $40. It wasn't so bad. He gave great head. Robin laughed until her belly hurt. She never heard a female use the expression before. Amanda had crinkled up her mouth and smiled like a fish after she said it. "I'm going back to New Jersey for a visit at the end of the week." "Robin." Amanda's face was serious now. "Do you think that's going to be good for you?" "I need to visit my mother. And I want to see what he's doing." "Did he call you?" "Yes." "Did you tell him that you were going back?" "How did he sound?" "Like he was going to come on the phone." They began to laugh again. Amanda didn't press the issue about Robin going back. She felt it was the wrong thing for Robin to do, but she'd made that clear, and she knew Robin was going to go ahead with it.